the Toyota Hollywood Hotline. And we're joined by Robert Littell of Black Sports Online on Twitter, at BSO. Appreciate the time.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on. Happy early Thanksgiving.
Now, we were having this debate earlier, Robin, and I'm going to use you as my arbiter. If you were having a meat draft, where would turkey fall?
In a meat draft? Here's the thing about turkey. It's really, it's kind of like Robert Ory. It only shows up really once a year, you know, during playoff time, which is Thanksgiving. So, you know, it falls, I wouldn't call it an elite meat. It just shows up on, you know, thing. I'm more of a ham person myself.
Okay, so you're like everybody else who has taste buds. Okay, excellent. let's talk about this Monday night game. And I will say it was probably the best game that I've seen in my lifetime. I think the only thing I can really compare it to that stands out as memorable as what I saw was maybe last year's Super Bowl, but we're talking about Super Bowl. I'm just talking about a regular season game and then the 85 Bears game.
When they played the Dolphins.
Where would you stack up what you saw Monday night in your archive of football games you've ever watched?
I think it was the most Madden-ish game that I've ever seen, and you don't really see that a lot in the NFL, but seeing it a lot, you know, this year. So when you're talking about a casual fans, or you just want to be excited, you want to see offense is the sexiness of it. So, you know, from an offensive standpoint, a lot of touchdowns, celebrations, L.A. I mean, it had a lot of sexiness to the game. So I would say it was the most Madden 95-ish type of game that I've ever seen.
Now, there's a fight upcoming, Adrian Broner and Manny Pacquiao. I saw you doing some previews of that fight. How competitive do you really think that's going to be?
You know, it always depends on Adrian Broner. He's never in a bad fight. You know, his fights are always entertaining for various, you know, reasons. But, I mean, there's nothing to suggest that Adrian Broner, who every time he stepped up against good competition has lost, anything is going to change unless Manny Pacquiao, you know, has aged overnight to the point where he can't beat someone like Adrian Broner. In his prime, Manny Pacquiao would have knocked out Adrian Broner and beat him up, you know, really bad. This version of Manny Pacquiao, I think, is so smart maybe in the boxing ring that he's going to win. It may be exciting, but don't expect any, you know, type of knockouts or anything like that. But I give Adrian Broner a puncher's chance because we have seen Pacquiao get knocked out cold. And anytime you get knocked out cold, it's always in the back of your mind that could happen again.
We're joined here by Robert Littell of Black Sports Online. What's on the internet today that's catching the most steam? Because I feel like as someone who runs a website like this, a lot of these blogs kind of all traffic on pretty similar stories. So what's the story that you feel like is capturing the national attention today?
You know, I think a lot of people from a sports side is interested in, you know, Kevin Durant calling people that heckle him and call him cupcake weak. And corny for someone that has burner accounts and let Draymond call him the B word. You know, I think a lot of people are talking about that. There's always stuff with the LeBron going back to the Cavs. There's always a lot of that stuff going on from the IG model front. I know that Omar likes to talk about. You have Lonzo
is this like
Ball.
A beat? Is this like a beat that you're on the IG model front?
Yeah. Listen, I give Robert credit because he was the first one that coined that sort of patented the phrase IG models, and all of a sudden it just became a cottage industry.
Yeah, Lonzo Ball broke up with his baby mama because he's an NBA player now, and he says he doesn't have time for high school girlfriends anymore. Patrick Mahomes' lady is getting some interesting comments. She's being blamed for him putting ketchup on steak and other things. So they're saying that, you know, he's not enough soul maybe in the household, and that's why he's putting ketchup on steak and other assorted of items.
Listen, I saw you do a post about Kim Kardashian. Let me reference her full name for those who are not keeping what's going on.
Are there other Kim K's got to be aware of?
Hey, there's some 60-year-old individual sitting on his couch listening to sports talk radio like, who's this Kim K girl? Kim Kardashian and her husband Kanye. Kim is alleging, and I don't believe this, that Kanye gets upset when she posts the thirst trap pictures that she posts. And
yeah.
I feel like if you're explaining who Kim Kardashian is to the 6-year-olds, you have to explain what a thirst trap is.
Oh, okay, a thirst trap. Yes. Robert, please explain the thirst trap picture, please.
Well, a thirst trap is when, you know, a young lady or male, you know, goes on social media, be it Twitter or Instagram, and they post, you know, something scantily clad to get the likes and the comments
and the attention.
So you're trapping them with thirst. And, you know, a lot of guys, they see that. And it's a lot of girls sometimes, depending on if it's an athlete that's posting or an entertainer or rapper. And, you know, they get a little thirsty for it. They start talking how much they want the person. So Kim K.
Yeah, your DMs get activated.
Yeah. Kim K's whole industry is kind of based off of that. So she basically said that, hey, I got to do it from time to time to make, you know, make the cash.
I'm sorry, but
But
isn't he the same guy who encouraged her to pose nude in for magazines?
Right. So it's a gift and a curse, as I always like to say. Everybody wants the girl that does the thirst trap.
Yeah, that's true.
Gets a girl
that's true.
You want to
be like, what you putting that picture up for? Okay. I get you.
Exactly. So I think it's more of a gift and a curse because we look at the thirst trap pictures and we're like, man, we want a girl like that. You know, that's what happened with, Murray in with the Spurs. He got him an IG model, and she did a lot of the thirst traps. And he was like, hey, we're together now. We've been together for a year.
Yeah, you ain't got to do that no more, boo. Mm-mm.
And she was like, no, this is my industry. This is my business. Why are you being so jealous? And next thing you know, he was calling her a gold digger, and she was doing rants on Instagram about, you know, how she got her own money and her own Range Rover. So,
yeah.
You want them, you know, like that, that's the thirst. But then when you get them, you got to be secure enough to handle it.
Yeah.
I admire the degree to which Robert has sunk himself into this world.
Oh, no, he's a pioneer. Just... Honestly, Robert, you do more IG model stories than anybody in the industry, and that's how I keep up to date on who are the new It Girls.
Hey, look, my view is very nice from a condo. Somebody got to pay for that.
I wanted to ask, can I ask you about the Kevin Durant story? Because you were talking about it earlier, and he had that interview with Chris Haynes in which he found out about his fine while doing the interview. And the idea, I find this fascinating, right? The guy that's sort of saying, why is a grown-ass man going to an NBA game to heckle a superstar? Paying a lot of money. He's sitting courtside.
That's the story of his life, though.
He's the guy with the burner accounts. Like, shouldn't a grown ass man not be responding to people that say things
Robert,
about him on Twitter?
Wouldn't the goal be to get a response from Kevin Durant? Kevin Durant's being fined for the response.
Well, I think this is one of those type of things where the message may be good, but the messenger is not the right messenger for it. I think fans should be allowed to heckle within reason.
No.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if you're calling somebody a cupcake, I don't think that bad. If you're saying somebody's soft or weak or they're a scrub, I don't think that's bad.
What about if I call them a B?
I think that's different. To me, when you cross over to the personal, then I don't have a problem with someone saying, you know, you need to, you know, shut the, you know, whatever up and this and that. I don't have a problem with that. But if all they called him was a cupcake, and then he curses them out, I think in that dynamic, he would be the one in the wrong. Now, if they called him something, you know, out of his name, or, you know, cursed him out or said something about his mama, then I don't have no problem. They just punched him right in the jaw. Like, that wouldn't bother me, you know, at all. Like, I think we all, look, in the streets, you know, I talk about this, Omar, you know, in the streets, there's always a line when you're telling jokes.
Yeah.
Where there's a line that you don't cross when you're telling those jokes.
You could have a whole series of, you could do 10 minutes of your mama jokes, but everybody knows there's a line.
There's a line. So I think fans, especially, you know, the ones of the Caucasian flavor, you know, sometimes, you know, they don't know where that line's at. And they go too far because they think they bought the tickets and they give them carte blanche to say whatever they want to say. And I think that's unfair to the athlete because you know you wouldn't say that if you just saw them randomly at Starbucks.
Now, Robert, I want to ask you, because I know you get the movie premieres, because, you know, you're Hollywood now. You're Hollywood. I knew you back when you was Ohio, but you're Hollywood now. But Creed 2, I'm going to make an admission right now and say to you, I did not see Creed 1.
Mm-hmm.
Can I go see Creed 2?
Well, Yeah, I mean, have you seen any of the Rocky films?
Yes, I've seen the Rocky films, yes. But I did not see Creed 1.
Okay, right, you don't need to see Creed 1 to see Creed 2 as long as you've seen Rocky 4.
Which one was that?
You know, oh,
yes, yes.
I must break it. If he dies, he dies.
Yeah, yes, yes. Okay, I've seen that one, yes.
Right.
That was a spot-on impersonation, Robert.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, if you've seen Rocky 4, you see Creed 2, because basically it's just a sequel to Rocky 4. That's all it really is. It really has nothing to do with Creed 1. Creed 1 was like an origin story to like let you know that, you know, Apollo had a kid, but it's really not necessary to watch Creed 2. As long as you know what happened to Apollo and why he's dead, then you'd be okay.
Are you judging me because I haven't seen Creed 1?
I would judge if you hadn't seen Rocky 3 with Mr. T, because that's the greatest Rocky of all time. Hey, woman, why don't you come over here with a real man? Yeah, that's Oscar-worthy type of stuff right now.
Oscar-worthy.
Well, that is Robert Littell of Black Sports Online. You can find his work, and especially if you want to know about Instagram models, because that's really, as Robert says, somebody got to pay for that condo in L.A. That is his specialty on BSO. You can find it at BSO, just BSO. Robert, always appreciate your time, brother.
All right. You guys have a happy Thanksgiving, and don't hate too much on the turkey, because it's like Robert Ory.
That's six titles, the Robert Ory of meats turkey. By the way, every time his handle comes in my feed and I see at BSO, I think it's like an update from the Broward Sheriff's Office. two totally different entities, but with the same acronym. I was like, BSO? Oh, yeah, that's right.
I mean, when he started, he did sports.
Yeah.
And it just evolved into what
detectives.
It is. Yeah.
It's amazing.
And it keeps you updated on what's going on these social media streets.
Listen, man, we're going to talk some hurricanes coming up next. One of the big stories of the year for Miami happened on Instagram when Nekosi Perry was put that video up of him with like a wad, a disturbingly big wad of cash that he was flaunting around on Instagram. But
you flogging. Radio.com.
Radio.com. Here on 560 WQAM in for Hockman and Crowder, who will be out for the remainder of the week, back on Monday, enjoying a Thanksgiving vacation. Joined now by Manny Navarro of The Athletic. He is on Twitter at Manny_Navarro, covering the Miami Hurricanes, who have had a major developing news story. That is, Jeff Thomas has been dismissed from the program. Manny, kind enough to join us here on the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. So Manny, we'll just kind of start with a basic question. What happened here?
Yeah, well, I mean, by all accounts and people that I've spoken to behind the scenes, Jeff Thomas apparently has had a falling out with the coaching staff over the last couple of weeks. He's been upset about playing time and different issues. And, you know, he played the second fewest snaps of the season in Saturday's win against the Hokies. Only got 28 snaps at receiver. And, you know, it seemed like things were happy after the game. He scored a touchdown. He was a big part of the win. But it kind of carried over into this week. He missed practice Tuesday and Wednesday. And what somebody told me was that today he went in for a meeting with Mark Richt and some of the other offensive assistants. The meeting did not go well. He left angry, said a few colorful words, and Mark Richt finally announced after practice this afternoon that he'd been dismissed from the team.
So in terms of the devolution of all this in some respects, this is a player who, for me, has probably been the standout offensive talent for the Miami Hurricanes this year. Why did the coaching staff start to reduce his playing time, and where do you think that problem began?
Well, I mean, look, Mark Richt, he suspended three of his quarterbacks this season, and he's kind of been, you know, trying to deliver a message, I think, to some of these kids who maybe were treated differently where they played before in high school, where maybe they were sort of given the royal treatment. And I'm not necessarily accusing Jeff Thomas of that, although he does have a history of that in high school, reportedly. But I think he's been trying to come down hard on some of these kids and get more out of them. And Thomas just didn't react well to it. I think this speaks more to the way kids are nowadays. A lot of these high school kids, they come in a little bit more sort of expecting the royal treatment because they were stars wherever they came from. And when you have an old school coach like Mark Richt, that can create some problems. And I think with Jeff Thomas, it just sort of came to a head finally this week.
There's been kind of a growing storyline with the Hurricanes this week. A lot of you guys are writing about how three of the Hurricanes' four quarterbacks entering the year have been suspended at varying points. I guess it's something that a lot of people have pointed out is, well, where are these problems on defense? Why is it that on Mark Richt's side of the ball, why is it that it's been on and off field struggles for Mark Richt with ostensibly his unit of the team?
Yeah, I mean, what's happened is that that unit has struggled, you know, and those guys have been feuding and fighting probably behind the scenes over playing time, over their roles. And on Manny Diaz's side of the ball, I mean, they've just been playing really well. I mean, they're putting up top 10 numbers, and those guys just have a united front. I mean, it's just the way things happen on teams sometimes. And I think, you know, to credit to Manny Diaz, obviously he's got more talent on his side of the ball than Mark Richt does, in my opinion, especially, you know, when you look at the leadership position. I think when you look at this offense, there really aren't, you know, those vocal leaders, those guys who are going to be, you know, sort of keeping everybody in line behind the scenes. Whereas the defense, you've got a whole bunch of seniors and a bunch of guys that have played for Manny for 3 years and respect the hell out of him. And, you know, they sort of set the tone in the locker room, and I think that's what this is a product of.
How much do you think, Manny, that this is part of a culture problem that's going on right now at the University of Miami?
It's hard to say. Oh, I mean, I think, you know, I look at Mark Richt, and I think, look, this guy had a lot of success at Georgia in the SEC. He had some good teams. You listen to his former players. I mean, I think he did well there. You know, for the most part, you don't hear too many bad stories about Mark Richt to Georgia. Now, the ending wasn't great, but I think here it could just be, like you said, a culture clash. It could just be that he's sort of an old-school guy, very religious guy, and maybe there's just some kids he just doesn't have good relationships with, you know. And Thomas Brown, the offensive coordinator, talked a little bit about it today, about how they got to do a better job recruiting guys, not just who want to come play for the University of Miami and have the talent to play here, but have the mental makeup and can handle sort of what they expect from them. And I think, you know, again, that falls on Richt. He's got to know how to read these kids. I know he's 58 now. He's been doing this a long time.
Oh, that's an excuse, Manny. I covered Bobby Bowden, who was 70, and he found a way to relate to 20-year-olds, and Richt was there.
Well, you're right, but I think that's why you have to hire the right staff, right? Like, you got to hire the guys beneath you who handle these problems and are able to sort of resolve it, and I'm not sure you have that situation. I think you have some young coaches on this staff who, for whatever reason, I don't think they've handled some of these situations right. You look at the quarterback room, the three suspensions. Well, the quarterback room is where John Richt is, the 28-year-old guy who doesn't have a ton of experience. I think Bobby always surrounded himself around people who were around the game enough and knew the kids well enough and knew how to handle them. And I think on this staff in particular, there's some guys that are either out of touch or just don't have the experience and know how to handle these kids.
Now, a lot of what I see, you know, Manny, this has been one of the most disappointing Hurricane seasons because primarily they had talent and they had expectations and it's just fizzled out. Coaches have to take responsibility. Players have to take responsibility. Are they not being coached properly? And if they and or is this an issue where players don't have the mental makeup or the work ethic to do what they're being coached to do?
Look, I've talked to some of the former guys who have been around the program. Brett Romberg spent a couple weeks here with the kids in the film room, you know, just sort of talking to them and getting an understanding. He told me that to him, they're getting the right kind of coaching. The message that Stacey Searles is delivering in the film room is the right message. Bryant McKinney's been around here. You know, Joaquin Gonzalez, different guys who were part of the championship past, and they say, look, the kids are different nowadays a little bit. You know, they're just not, they're not reacting the way you expect them to. And I go back to how we started this conversation. A lot of them, I think, just expect to come into college and play right away. And when a coach sort of, you know, puts them in check and says, hey, man, you're not ready yet. You're not doing all the things we need you to do. You're not, you know, if you're a running back, you're not pass protecting the way we need you to pass protect. You're not playing for your teammates the way you need to play for your teammates. Those guys are just used to picking up and running. I mean, you look at it, Omar, how many kids transfer high schools multiple times now where it's just like a revolving door?
Oh, wow. Excellent point, Manny. They don't like one coach or one coach is not playing them. They just go to another school.
Right, and I think that's sort of what's happened. I think that's sort of what's happened with a lot of these kids.
And it's, I guess my problem in reconciling that, we're joined here by Amanda Navarro of The Athletic, my problem with reconciling what you're saying, which I think is an accurate observation by someone who's been around this sport a long time, I guess the problem for me with Jeff Thomas is he was playing a lot. He leads the team in receptions and yards, and he's an important part of their offense. If even that isn't good enough, then isn't he basically then saying, well, I think there's something wrong schematically, or our quarterbacks aren't very good,
or our offense has 8 plays in it.
Right. Like that we don't have enough to accentuate my skill, because in theory he's the best player on the team and he's performed like it. So him demanding or wanting more is kind of an indictment of everything else, because I feel like, in my opinion, has held up his end.
Right. Well, I mean, I can't sit here and theorize, you know, what – I wish I had spoken to Jeff and had a chance to ask him what he was going through. I mean, we could sit here and guess, but I can tell you the facts. The facts are he was the most targeted receiver on his team, 60 targets this season. I think the next closest guy was, like, 44 or something like that. And then as far as just snaps, he played the second most snaps behind Lawrence Cager, offensive snaps. I mean, so the opportunities were there for him. I think – in the end, it just could be a frustration with Mark Richt and maybe the way Richt is talking to him and the discipline and the expectations that he wants him to meet, and he's just not doing it. It could be a lot of different things. I don't know. I think in the end, what we're seeing here is a situation where the best player from the Miami Hurricanes offense is gone. He's been dismissed from this team, and it's been a really disappointing season. So in the end, this is always going to fall back on Mark Richt, and it's going to just be a poor reflection of him. You can't get your best player in line, and you're losing games that you shouldn't lose. And so I think that's just the way it's going to be viewed, regardless of you know what it was Jeff Thomas was upset about.
Couple more for you. One is, where are they from here at the wide receiver position?
Well, look, they got a whole lot. They had one of their best recruiting classes ever, I think, at the receiver position last year. But we haven't seen a whole lot of those guys. Mark Pope was at the top of that list. He finally had his first catch Saturday against Virginia Tech. He's an uber-talented kid, but again, he's been behind D. Wiggins and other guys, other freshmen who have played more than he has. So, look, they got 7 guys at the receiver position who have a catch this year, so I don't think it's going to be a lack of experience. Those guys have all played and been in reps. I think it's just a matter of, you know, who's the game-breaker in this offense now, because Jeff Thomas took the top off that defense a lot. I don't know that they have many other guys who can do that right now. I think in the future they'll have those guys, and those guys will develop into those stars. But right now, at least for these last 2 games, you're missing your most explosive player on offense and on special teams.
Now, and the last thing I wanted to ask you about was, how much do you think has sort of been eroded from last year? I feel like if you ask Hurricanes fans last year, the approval rating of Mark Richt was 100%. Everyone was totally in on what he was doing, and that this program was heading in the right direction, had grown in years 1 and 2, and now taking a massive step back. Your colleague Chrissy Chirinos, who covers the Canes for the Sun Sentinel, tweeted out a list of things that have happened this year. 3 of the 4 quarterbacks have been suspended. A starting linebacker was suspended. The Hurricanes had a 4-game losing streak. There was a video with a large amount of cash for one of the quarterbacks. Players unhappy and a potential graduate student transfer, and a top receiver has been dismissed. This has been a pretty disastrous season. Do you feel like everything, the foundation of what Mark Richt looked like he was building here, is kind of all gone now?
Well, it certainly doesn't look good and doesn't feel good, but I've been here, and Omar knows this, because we covered the team together back in the Randy Shannon days. I mean, there were some really bad days here.
Yeah, that's pretty much what you've listed. It's highlighted by the fact that it's been a bad season, but that's really college football.
Yeah, I think it's just been a bad year, but I wouldn't say that Mark Richt has lost everything. I think it's going to be an important offseason for him. I think he's going to have to hire an offensive coordinator, and I think he's going to have to definitely either develop Nikosi Perry into a quarterback or recruit one or get a graduate transfer from somewhere. But this is still a salvageable thing at Miami, and especially if you can keep Manny Diaz on the defensive side of the football. I feel like that was such a huge problem with Al Golden. The fact that they've gone back to playing that Miami-style defense, that in itself, is a victory for Mark Richt.
Now, if you're Manny Diaz now, wouldn't this be the ideal time to spread out and spread your wings?
Yeah, you'd think so. You'd think so, Omar. I think, the thing with Manny is he really enjoys coaching in Miami.
He's a Miami guy.
And he loves coaching these kids. Like, he's invested a whole lot of energy in all of these kids.
He also loves money, though.
That's true. And I think Miami will have to open up its pocketbook to keep him. But I think if the Hurricanes are smart, they're going to do that. And I would suspect that would be priority number one, is don't let Manny Diaz walk out the door.
Oh, Manny Diaz. Ball State's waiting for you, sir.
I will say, like,
Middle Tennessee is calling your name. It's time to go.
I feel like Miami not being good, thus him not being a finalist for the Broyles Award, is almost a good thing in some ways towards Miami's efforts of keeping him.
Nah,
because I don't feel like he's, like, last year, the turnover chain is a bigger thing.
The people who know football know Manny Diaz is a good coach, mm-hmm. and you better go get him because you're going to be sitting on a good gem.
Yep. Manny Navarro of The Athletic. Check him out on Twitter at @Manny_Navarro. Thanks for the time.
Good talking to you guys. Take care.
All right, that is Manny Navarro joining us here on WQAM. Coming up next, we'll have our University of Miami Sports Medicine Institute, Miami Dolphins injury report, and more on the Dolphins with Omar Kelly of the Sun Sentinel.
Radio.com.
Chris Whittingham and Omar Kelly here on 560 WQAM here until 6 p.m. Coming up in the next segment, we'll be joined by Omar Kelly's colleague covering the Miami Dolphins, Safid Dean, here on WQAM. We'll talk to Miami Dolphins. We'll talk to Miami Dolphins now as well, because it's time for University of Miami Sports Medicine Institute injury update. Now at the Lennar Foundation Medical Center in Coral Gables, recover your game. Visit uhealthsportsmedicine.com. The Dolphins injury list is still quite long, as
yeah, I'm sorry for laughing.
So today, Danny Amendola was limited with a hamstring injury. Full participants were Stephon Anthony, Andre Branch, and Jesse Davis. Limited were AJ Derby and Kenyon Drake. Kenyon Drake, did that happen in the last game?
It happened in the Green Bay game. He's battling a shoulder injury. So yep. is Devontae Parker, mm-hmm. who says, "I could play. It only hurts when I lift my hand above my head," which, you know, it's kind
oh,
of
is in, that? Oh, is that all?
Yeah, it's kind of important when you need to actually catch footballs. But yeah,
right. I mean, he's pretty tall, but I don't know. I don't know if he's that tall.
Yeah.
Did not practice Frank Gore, but that is non-injury related. It's basically like a rest day.
Yeah,
right?
Frank Gore never practices on Thursday.
Okay.
I'm sorry, on
Wednesday.
No. Let me correct myself.
Is the schedule reworked?
Yes, the schedule is reworked.
Okay.
And I know it's Wednesday for you humans that don't obsess about football, but when practice days, they go, a Wednesday day is a contact day. It's your full mm-hmm. grind day. Gore does that day. Mm-hmm. The Thursday is the day that he does not practice. He never practices on Thursday.
Got it.
And this week, because of Thanksgiving, the week was pushed up. They practice on Monday, which they usually don't. Actually, no, they practice on Monday, and they practice on Tuesday, which they usually mm-hmm. don't.
Got it. Now, they're still listing Jakeem Grant on the injury report with an Achilles. Is that because they haven't figured out the player they want to bring in for his roster spot when they put him on IR? Or?
I suspect, well, yes, they're going to put him on IR.
Mm-hmm.
It comes down to what they need the roster spot for. I personally do not believe Devontae Parker will play this week. I mm-hmm. believe Isaiah Ford will be promoted, and this is just a hunch,
mm-hmm.
activated to the roster,
especially
with Danny Amendola battling. And Danny Amendola's battled something all year.
Mm-hmm. He's been another non-injury related on the injury report all year long.
Yes, yes, yes.
But even still, so you have, damaged Amendola. You have Kenny Stills, who's not on the injury
exactly.
report, but has been nursing an injury all year. You have Bryce Butler. And,
yeah, who doesn't know your offense. You
right.
need
and then
Isaiah
Ford, and then Leonte Carew, and that's your group of receivers. So as much as you get Ryan Tannehill back,
yeah.
it's not with a full complement of players.
Exactly. Here's what I felt very uncomfortable with this week, and I'm just going to be open and honest about it. We have shifted now into the excuse-making era of the season, which I'm not very comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they've got a ton of injuries. The injury report is long and it's extensive.
I'm only halfway through it, by the way.
Okay. If you'd like to finish, I'll let you finish later.
Please.
But we're getting to the point now where Adam Gase is just being flat-out honest, but it's an excuse that, yeah, Ryan's back, but Ryan's playing with a whole group of receivers he doesn't have chemistry with and doesn't know.
Mm-hmm.
and except for Danny Amendola and Kenny Stills, who that's two of three people you know
that you're going to throw out there. And his tight ends, he's been practicing with O'Leary all year.
I know O'Leary wasn't really you. Mm-hmm. O'Leary started playing after you got hurt, but yeah. Don't use these excuses.
Is there a world in which
I watch Isaiah Ford be the top playmaker week one of training camp, and yes, it was week one of training camp before he got hurt. Once he got hurt, he disappeared.
I'm surprised that Ford wasn't preferred to Bryce Butler, some player that they brought in off the street. Like, why wasn't Ford brought up first?
They needed his size. They needed Bryce Butler's size. They've got their whole receiver unit Smurfs. So you can't. There's a certain way that you can play them, and I'm not going to say this on radio because people are going to start parroting it. But there's a certain way that you can play the Dolphins, and you can negate the receivers. And teams are doing that, and you need size to counteract that. Mm-hmm. And Devontae Parker's your only receiver with size, so now they've added a second.
Is there a possibility that with all these receiver injuries that they run the ball 35 times on Sunday?
Absolutely.
Against the Colts?
Yeah. I mean, here's what I like about Adam Gase, and I don't think people who are not just casual football fans pick this up. The game plan is specifically always designed about the opponent. And this opponent, unfortunately for them, the Colts are allowing 3.9 yards per carry, which is sixth best in the NFL. That's pretty good.
For a team that's kind of always been known as having a soft center on both sides of the line, offensive and defensive lines have never been their strength.
Yeah, they're changing that. The that's what happens when new management comes into town.
Yeah.
I would feel a little bit more comfortable if you threw the ball against them. Unfortunately, you don't have that much weapons. And who are you going to throw the ball to?
And as well as I think it went pretty well for the Dolphins' offensive line in Green Bay. And I think Osweiler created a lot of those sacks.
You were without your top two players on the off. Top four. Yeah. Jesse Davis was the only veteran starter from the season opener that was on the line. And I think they did well. I mean, Frank Gore, I'm sorry. For those who don't get it, and I realize a lot of simplistic, I'm insulting a lot of casual fans.
You've done that for 3 hours.
Yeah,
so far.
I'm sorry. Which is why now I understand why I'm not liked. Why people hate me. But if you don't see the beauty in what Frank Gore is doing,
Adam Gase put it perfectly, in which he said it was after I think the Jets game in which they did nothing, and he goes, if there's a crevice, Frank Gore will find 4 yards through it.
Yeah,
and like that's what he does, and that's what he's done all season. And
I know it's not sexy. I know it doesn't doesn't fill your fantasy football lineup and points or whatever your PPR PPI whatever the hell that is. I get it.
Yeah,
it's not sexy. But Frank Gore is as efficient a football player as there is in the league.
Yes. He is maximizing everything out there. Doesn't have the top end speed to then maximize it into an 80-yard run.
Yeah.
But anything, if there's anything there, he's getting 4 yards.
I mean, he's a magician, and we're blessed to watch a Hall of Famer in the end of his career.
Who's
still playing well. And still, the jump cuts that I see, Kenyon Drake don't jump cut. Do you know what a jump cut is? Most people don't understand what a jump cut is. It's literally a shift from one leg to the next, cutting in a seamless motion to change a running lane. And Kenyon Drake's nice, and I love his speed, but if he's not running outside zone, if teams take away his outside zone, he's useless. If Kenyon Drake doesn't have outside zone runs or isn't catching a pass in the flat, he's useless. Frank Gore can do it all. And there's magic to what you're seeing here. And I would say he's been one of the most consistent producers. And people who can't get it and say, well, why isn't Kenyon Drake playing more? Literally, I'm in the locker room. I talk to the coaches. If you mention Frank Gore's name, everybody's going to say, the GOAT. He's a GOAT, one of the greatest of all time. Mm-hmm. And statistically, he's one of the greatest of all time. And you're watching him work. It's not like anybody's saying, oh, man, I wish Kenyon Drake would be playing more. I wish Kenyon Drake. Mm-hmm. Kenyon Drake isn't even saying, I wish I would be playing more.
He's thinking it, though.
Yeah. He just wants to contribute. And I give him props because keep this in perspective, Dolphin fans. There's a reason Kenyon Drake has been a third down back his entire career.
High school, college, and pro.
He was a feature back in high school. But yes. Yeah. like, let's be real. And I know he was at Alabama with a super talented team. But even if he wasn't at Alabama with a super talented team, he probably would have come to the NFL and been a third down back.
All right, let's finish out this injury report quickly before we go to break. Charles Harris, full participant with a calf injury. He is on the mend.
Finally, you might be able to get to see Charles Harris. He might give you 19 tackles this season.
Xavien Howard, full participant. He is dealing with a little bit of an ankle injury. Juwan James.
He's been playing with it for the last couple of weeks. And what people don't understand or recognize about people always just expect high level of performance from players. Mm-hmm. But T.J. McDonald, when he was battling a foot injury and a knee injury, I don't think he's on the injury report right now, his play dipped a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And
T.J. McDonald's a player who's played five defensive snaps.
He's having a career year.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't realize that because all they think about is, oh, God, look how horrible he looks while people are running by him in the secondary.
Like everyone noted that for the Aaron Jones touchdown against Green Bay, he took the bad angle that leads to it. But that's one play. Like he's still playing pretty well. By the way, the only Dolphin that has played in every single defensive snap is Kiko Alonso, playing all 669 defensive snaps for the Dolphins this year. Rashad Jones, a full participant with a shoulder, limited all were Ted Larson. T.J. McDonald is on the injury report with a knee injury. He was limited today, as was Devontae Parker, limited with a shoulder. Travis Swanson, a full participant with an elbow. Ryan Tannehill, limited participant with his right shoulder. And Laremy Tunsil, limited with a knee injury. Tunsil and James coming back would be huge for them, but they were both limited today. Something to keep an eye on for the remainder of the week.
You can say they say they're playing. It's exclusive in Sun Sentinel. Go to sunsentinel.com.
Sunsentinel.com and check it out. Speaking of sunsentinel.com, Safid Dean, your colleague, is going to join us next. Talk to Miami Dolphins here on WQAM. Radio.